KALW.
It's the most excruciating pain you've ever felt. I mean, like you're trying to turn yourself inside out, you know?
A mobile health team in Contra Costa County brings medication to people with addiction living on the streets.
He's not going to get treatment otherwise, so it needs to happen here.
Now the doctor leading that effort worries about the additional challenge the coronavirus poses for them.
There are a lot of people dying right now, but the risk of overdose from opioids, it doesn't go away.
Then an incarcerated father and son see each other for the first time in 22 years.
When I rolled over to him, because I can't walk right now, I rolled to him and he just hugged me and I was lost for words. I couldn't say anything. I just grabbed him.
That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba and this is Cross Currents. One population that's especially vulnerable in this COVID-19 pandemic is people who are addicted to opioids. A medication known by the brand name Suboxone can help, but it can be difficult to access, especially for people who are homeless. In 2019, we reported on a dramatic increase in fentanyl-related deaths in Contra Costa County, and one East Bay doctor who decided to bring Suboxone prescriptions to the streets. KALW's Holly J. McDeed reports in this story from our archives.
Dr. Joseph Mega walks along the train tracks in Bay Point by the Delta. He's a doctor, but this morning he swapped his lab coat for a hoodie and the streets are his office. The people he's meeting today are homeless, and he's checking up on them. He's cheery and polite, almost like a camp counselor trying not to wake anyone up.
Hey, it's Dr. Mega. You guys need anything?
Dr. Mega leads Contra Costa County's street medicine team. A nurse and health insurance advisor join him to look for patients. It feels eerie and abandoned out here. Trash is piled sky high like dystopian artwork. People are camped out in tents. It's also remote enough that police usually leave the people living here alone.
It's kind of hard to find, so. In fact, there was a gas leak like 3 weeks ago where this whole area was evacuated except for these folks. No one came to tell them.
The area is full of yapping dogs and cats sneaking around. One of Mega's patients, who I'll call Ricky Johnson, stumbles out onto the path, looking dazed, like he's not sure how he ended up here. Johnson calls out for his beloved pit bull.
Chevelle Marie.
Come here, baby girl. Come here.
He has a beard, flashing eyes, and a habit of looking out into the distance, like he's thinking about other things. He lives out here with his wife. Johnson says he's been addicted to heroin for decades, ever since his dad died, and he went chasing after any high he could get.
So that's what a lot of us want, is that feeling. You know, that's the reason we did, is to push our problems away, you know.
Dr. Mega recently prescribed him Suboxone, a medication that eases the pain of heroin withdrawal and reduces cravings. Johnson says because of the medicine, he hasn't used heroin for a few days now. It helps him feel like he can actually get up and function, like he's normal.
You could take it in the morning, and the whole day is cool. You don't need cravings, no nothing. You know what I'm saying? You're just like, oh, cool. I'm gonna give it a shot, see what happens.
Well, I sent your medicine, and Kimmy's gonna get it later and bring it over to you, okay? All right, let us know if there's problems.
Dr. Mega gets back into his van, a medical clinic on wheels. This street medicine team is part of Contra Costa County's Healthcare for the Homeless program. When this street team got started around 2 years ago, Dr. Mega would constantly meet people desperate to quit heroin. At first, he referred them to the county's treatment group, but he found that people weren't showing up. So Dr. Mega says one day, he decided to prescribe Suboxone on the spot.
I remember the first person who I prescribed to, who came onto the van, and I just thought, well, he's not going to get treatment otherwise, so it needs to happen here.
Suboxone can be hard to access otherwise. Only about 5% of the nation's doctors have the necessary waiver to prescribe it. It's also not easy to keep doctor's appointments when you live on the streets or don't have an ID or health insurance.
If you create multiple
barriers to get access to something, they're just going to say, forget it, I can't do this. And so I think this is an opportunity to do something today.
He knows patients will relapse.
We sometimes, like, we'll joke and call them our white rabbits, because they'll show up and then all of a sudden they're disappeared. And we're like, where did that person go? And we feel like we're chasing them.
Dr. Mega continues his search for patients in the outskirts of Antioch, where dozens of people are camped out in a large field.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, we're here with the health team. You guys need anything?
Over on the edge of the field, one of the outreach team's patients, Michelle Rickford, is sitting on a lawn chair doing a crossword puzzle. Her gray hair is tied in a tight ponytail. She's 58 years old, and she says she first tried heroin on New Year's Eve, 5 years ago on the anniversary of her son's suicide.
I had a $50 bill that was back pay from SSI, and I thought, that's it. I'm just going to go out and I just want to get high. That was my goal, and I've just been doing it ever since.
The team also helped her get started on Suboxone. For a couple of days, she took it, but then she went back to using heroin. She last shot up this morning.
And it's a vicious damn circle. It's a hamster wheel that you never get off unless you really, really want to. You got to really want to get off it.
Rickford plans to try Suboxone again in a few days and make yet another attempt at a clean break. Dr. Joseph Mega considers that a victory. For him, it matters that homeless people like Rickford have access to treatment, even if it doesn't always lead to a lifetime of sobriety. He knows that Suboxone isn't the perfect solution. The doctors like him can only do so much.
If I held myself responsible for the outcomes of every patient that I've ever met, then I'm really exaggerating what I can do for people.
After seeing a couple more patients, Dr. Mega is done for the day. He hops inside the medical clinic on wheels and drives off. Dr. Mega and his team will be outside, bringing treatment to people on the streets. In Contra Costa County, I'm Holly J. McDeed for Cross Currents.
That story originally aired in 2019. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Since that story from Holly first aired, fatal overdoses from fentanyl have continued to rise. Now, there's the coronavirus crisis, and some advocates worry it may have serious consequences for people with addiction. So I asked Holly how the street outreach team is navigating the coronavirus crisis. So, Holly, you first shadowed this street medicine team over a year ago. What's changed for them since the coronavirus?
Right. So this pandemic has forced everyone to rethink what it means to be outside in the world. And the whole point of this on-the-move medical team is to reach people who live in encampments, in alleyways, in the field, on the streets, where they're at. So I wondered if the team was even going out there in the world at all. And so I called up Dr. Joseph Mega, who runs the outreach program.
We're still going out our 2 days a week, standing 6 feet away. We're wearing N95 masks when we're out. And that has its own just emotional and mental effects on people, right? Like, you're coming out in hazmat suits in their mind. You know, I could see it looking like that. And it feels sterile, and it feels like, you know, we represent probably something related to the virus.
So it might be jarring for people, and it might be harder to earn people's trust out there. But at the same time, there's also a huge need for this kind of outreach right now. People are afraid of using public transportation. So it really helps to have a medical team that can come directly to people. Dr. Mega says a few weeks ago, he dropped by a highway with dozens of tents along a fence.
Probably 15 people came out of the woodwork from around there. We had basically gave out all of the clean needles that we had on our van and gave out Narcan.
Narcan, what is that?
Yes, that's a drug that can reverse opioid overdoses. So it's really important when it comes to reducing the number of fatalities. And of course, Dr. Mega, like he often does, also gave people prescriptions for buprenorphine or Suboxone, which is a drug that can ease the pain of withdrawal. And Dr. Mega says the conversations he's had with people, of course, they've shifted to focusing on the coronavirus.
You know, what symptoms they should be worried about, how they can get tested for coronavirus if they're worried.
So Holly, what can the outreach team do for people who are worried?
So the outreach team has the ability to test people on the streets who have symptoms for the coronavirus. And what they're trying to do right now is they're moving quickly across the county. They're mapping where people live. They're screening people for symptoms. And they're also just educating people about the virus. And I asked Dr. Mega what he hears from the people he encounters on the streets.
I think the same thing that I'm hearing from the rest of the community. You know, people are afraid of getting sick, afraid of dying. And I think, you know, the main thing that people wish they had better access to are ways to clean their hands regularly. I mean, it's sort of, you know, a joke if I tell someone to wash their hands regularly if they don't have access to running water, right?
That would seem like a big issue. And Holly, as you've mentioned, the street team also provides prescriptions to help people with addiction. How has the coronavirus impacted that population?
So for people with addiction, Dr. Mega says that many of the people living in these encampments are now living alone in their tents, and they're trying to stay away from people as much as possible. On the one hand, that's great. That means that people are taking these precautions really seriously. But on the other hand,
anytime someone's using alone, you know, that puts them at higher risk of overdose. So that's been kind of on my mind when I'm going out and seeing people.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
It does, because when people use drugs alone, that means no one is nearby to call for medical help. No one is nearby to administer Narcan and reverse the effects of an overdose. So it's a really tough balance.
And I think, you know, there's a risk to both things, but I do think if people are going to be, you know, injecting or using opioids, probably better for them to have a single other person around than if they're using alone and have no one, even in the context of the coronavirus pandemic. And, you know, that there are a lot of people dying right now, but the risk of overdose from opioids doesn't go away.
The bottom line is that people are afraid to be around others right now, even when it means getting things like clean needles or treatment for medical conditions.
Right. And what does Dr. Mega think will be the larger fallout from that?
So we're already seeing some of the fallout around the Bay Area, and not just when it comes to people who are addicted. The number of visits to emergency rooms has plummeted because of the coronavirus. And in Contra Costa County, there's a program in the emergency room to help patients in withdrawal or who are addicted to opioids get started on buprenorphine. Again, that's the medication that can ease the pain of withdrawal. So the decline in ER visits means less people are receiving that kind of help, all kinds of help, really. Dr. Mega told me about a woman he encountered while making the rounds with the street outreach team a few weeks ago.
And she had actually like a pretty significant abscess on the side of her neck. And usually, you know, an infection under the skin from injecting either into a muscle or using a needle that's not been cleaned off.
Wow, Holly, I mean, that sounds very problematic.
It is. I mean, it's not good to have this really bad infection on your neck. But at the same time, this woman didn't want to go to the hospital because she was afraid that it would put her at risk for the coronavirus.
It was helpful, I think, to be able to talk to that person and say, actually, this is pretty serious. You need to go to the hospital. Those are the types of things people might be, you know, delaying getting care for.
I mean, all of this seems like quite a dilemma. People kind of choosing not to go get care when they need it. These are tough decisions to make.
It's true. And Dr. Mega, while he did not want to, you know, predict the future, does feel like give it 3 months down the line and we're going to start learning more about people dying, people getting diseases unrelated to the coronavirus, but because they're afraid of accessing care. There will be side effects for people who are homeless, a population that already has higher rates of underlying health conditions.
you know, it's not surprising, right? Like any disaster that affects the population in any part of the world, but in the United States, is disproportionately going to affect poor people and people who are marginalized or homeless. And so I think that will be an unfortunate outcome. And right now we're just doing our best to try to mitigate it and continue our services as best we can.
All right. Well, thank you for the update, Holly.
Thank you, Hannah.
That was KALW Justice reporter Holly J. McDeed. For more of her stories, go to kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Next, we've got a story from the Uncuffed team at Solano State Prison in Vacaville.
From Solano State Prison,
this is Uncuffed.
Today's story comes from Uncuffed producer Steve Drown, who's incarcerated at Solano.
Prison is not always family-friendly, especially when it comes to incarcerated fathers and sons. Lorenzo Fosselman Jr. and Lorenzo Fosselman Sr. haven't seen each other in 22 years. They're both life-term inmates, incarcerated at different prisons. Through a strange quirk of fate and medical issues, Lorenzo Sr. wound up here at Solano for a short period of time. We were able to bring Jr. and Sr. together for the first time in 22 years.
We had scheduled this before, and it got canceled.
Right.
So I was very disappointed, And I thought maybe it won't happen. This is prison, so anything could happen. So I was hoping when I got to Duckett last night, saying today, I tossed and turned all night. I really did.
Like I said, I've been anticipating seeing him for about a week now, ever since I found out that he was on the other yard. So I've been looking at the gate to see, just to catch that sight. And so when I seen him in the wheelchair over there, I knew instantly that was him. So I just called out to him. And then when he acknowledged it, he looked up and he seen me. I already knew. So, you know, it felt good. It was an internal thing for me more than the external jump, you know.
Well, when I first seen him, I heard someone say, "Pops," and I immediately looked up, and there he was, his arm raised. Here I am, and I was lost for words, but I had tears in my eyes. When I rolled over to him, because I can't walk right now, I rolled to him, and he just hugged me, and I was lost for words. I couldn't say anything. I just grabbed him. And I just held him, kissed him on his forehead. He didn't like it, but you know, I'm still processing that I've seen my son for the first time in 22 years.
Has it been what you guys thought it would be?
That and more, actually, but it takes me a while to process things, you know, so I'll probably process this for—
What I tell you.
For quite a while before I determine.
How about for you, Senior?
Yes. It's more than I imagined. It really is. I didn't think it would happen. We both got life sentences. We both in different prisons. So what was the odds that we would be in one spot at the same time?
I'm looking at father and son, and you see the nose is the same, the eyes are the same, the smile is the same. They have gestures that, I mean, it's just incredible how similar they are. I asked you in our first discussion, if he was sitting in front of you, what would you like to say to him? Is there anything else you want to say to him?
That I am probably on the path that I'm on. I'm on the page that I'm on, and I have the confidence that I have, largely in part because of the role that you've had in my life. And even the years that I was difficult and or hard-headed and I didn't pay attention, I always listened. I never blamed you for the choices that I did or didn't make. I never went with that when I got to the age of being able to understand things. So I understand now what it was that you was trying to tell me when I was a teenager. You know, I'm able to think freely. I'm able to, you know, be secure within myself. You know, a lot of people I know, they never knew their father. They never had any positive encouragement from their father.
I take responsibility for the train wreck I've caused for my life and the problems you had with yours. Because I know if I would have been there when you were a teenager, your life wouldn't be the way it is. Because I never wanted your life to be like mine. And this environment, I never wanted this for you. Every day and every night, it hurts me to my heart to see you sitting here in blue. It really does. But I'm proud of you. The sacrifices you've made, the man you've become, and the journey you're on, that you're on, it's just powerful.
And I appreciate that. I always will appreciate that, and I always love you for it.
I love you too, son.
That was Lorenzo Fosselman Jr. and Lorenzo Fosselman Sr. Jr. works in the law library at Solano Prison. After that meeting, Sr. was transferred out to Valley Prison in Chowchilla. They were both interviewed by Steve Drown, a producer in KLW's radio program at Solano. Our work there is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability, and all content is approved by an information officer. You can listen to more stories from Uncuffed at our website, klw.org/uncuffed. Today's Cross Currents team includes Sona Avakian, Janae Darden, Christopher Agusa, True Gwynn, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Jessica Placzek, Andrew Stelzer, and Eli Wertschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.